New Thinking Aloud is a non-profit endeavor. Your contributions to the New Thinking Aloud Foundation make a meaningful difference in our ability to produce new videos. You can now download a free PDF copy or purchase a beautiful printed edition of Issue 5 of the New Thinking Aloud magazine.
Thinking Aloud. Conversations on the leading edge of knowledge and discovery with psychologist Jeffrey Mishlove.
Hello and welcome. I'm Jeffrey Mishlove. Today we are going to dig into one of the most controversial cases in the history of ufology. We're going to look at the case of the one-armed Swiss farmer, Billy Myers, who has taken over 1,000 photographs of UFOs and has extensively recorded and reported on his conversations with a number of alien beings from other planets. You can imagine how controversial that might be. My guest is Britt Elders, who is co-author, along with her husband, Lee Elders, of the 45th anniversary edition of UFOs, Contact from the Pleiades. She also worked on the original edition of this classic book, which appeared in 1979. She is an investigative author and documentary filmmaker. She is also CEO of ShirleyMaclaine.com, the official website of the Academy Award-winning actress. And in fact, Britt and I interacted with each other some 25 years ago when she arranged for Shirley to interview me for Shirley's website. Britt is located in northern Arizona, and now I'll switch over to the internet video. Welcome, Britt. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Thank you. I appreciate the invitation. I'm really looking forward to this.
And I'm delighted to discover that we met each other previously over 20 years ago, I think.
Yes, back in, I believe it was either 1999 or the year 2000, when you came out with the PK Man and I arranged the interview between you and Shirley MacLaine.
It's very interesting that you did that because today we'll be talking about the Billy Myers case in which you were involved. And there are a number of parallels, I think, between Ted Owens and Billy Myers. Both of them claimed, for example, to be in telepathic communication with aliens, and both claimed that they could demonstrate this over and over and over again.
That's very true. The difference with Billy was he was also in physical communication as well as telepathic communication. And what makes his case so unique is he was provided physical documentation that we couldn't create at that period of time. So that was something that set that case aside from others.
Well, I, of course, ordered a copy of the original book, UFO from the Pleiades, as soon as it came out. I think it was a collector's edition. I probably paid $100 for it at the time. In fact, I still have two copies of the 1979 edition of that book. And of course, it's like over and above any other case in which I'm aware of. In terms of evidence, like hundreds of pictures of UFOs in the book and detailed descriptions of the various forms of analysis of the UFO photos themselves and the locations at which the contact seemed to be taking place and indentations in the ground where the UFOs apparently had landed and metallurgical analysis of samples from the UFOs. So it's quite extensive. And yet, it still remains among the most controversial cases. There are all sorts of red flags, and I'm sure you're aware of them as well.
Well, the first red flag, and it came up for us as investigators, was, oh my gosh, it's too good to be true. What do you do with that? But then as the evidence began to pile up and we had more and more and more, it was like, okay, this is really valuable, very, very important to go further into. And that's why we committed our company to it. We had an electronic countermeasure company that actually we kept big companies, Fortune 500s and corporations like that from being eavesdropped and wiretapped. And so it was a little different for us to step out of that genre of reality into something totally intangible. When you get down to the bottom line of it all, Billy Meyer's the only one that knows the truth. We can only analyze the evidence he presented. We can only investigate and document the things surrounding him, speak with the witnesses. And we did all of that. And we couldn't find any form of deception. And that right there is something that just makes you think. Whether you want to believe it or not, it makes you think. And that's important.
I totally agree. It's definitely a very thought-provoking case. Now, I remember back in those days, in the 1970s, 1980s, I had a mentor back then, Arthur M. Young. He happened to be the person who invented the helicopter, and he was fascinated. He invented the Bell helicopter, the one with the little bubble, the whirly bird with the skids. It was the first commercially licensed helicopter, and he had a copy of the book, and he studied the conversations with Sem Jassy very carefully. In fact, he went out, and as I recall, the prime investigator back in those days was Wendell Stevens, who had published many, many books about individual contactees and their conversations with, I don't know, maybe 20 different varieties of aliens. And Arthur Young, who was very rigorous engineer and scientist, bought all of those books and donated them to the library there in Berkeley, California, near where we lived at the time. And he maintained that this could be the most important discovery facing humankind today, that it needed to be taken very, very seriously.
That is very true. Yes, Wendell brought us in for the investigation and brought our company into it. When you think about the ramifications of how sheltered we've been on this planet, thinking we're the only ones in the universe that have been gifted with life, it's kind of an arrogant thought. And then you look at what the possibilities are when you really look outside our little realm of existence and what that could mean, what we could learn, what we could develop as far as new concepts, new ideas with other people or other individuals that may not even look like us. They may be energy forms, who knows? But it's something that just, it should spark our creativity. It should spark our desire to learn and to know and to kind of center within yourself at the same time and become a little more open, receptive, and conscious about everything that you're involved with.
I totally agree with that sentiment. And at the same time, there are other red flags. For example, if I recall correctly, Billy Meyer's own wife accused him of fraud.
After the divorce, yes, she did. Prior to the divorce, she didn't. I know Poppy pretty well. My husband and I spent a total, well over a year living at the farm during a 7-year period of time. I saw a lot that went on at the farm, and I could see why Poppy Calliope would be aggravated and vengeful. And she was a fiery Greek. Boy, you didn't pull any punches with her. She just let loose when she got mad. I've heard both sides. I've seen the interview where she said, oh, that was a fake. But then I have her on camera on different places because we did several documentaries on this where she's saying, oh, so-and-so was here when we saw this and we saw that. And we talked to the other witnesses who were present at the same time. They saw the same thing. So I think it's more of an emotional response that she's reaching out angrily and saying, oh, this is a fake and it's all wrong, because there's too many other people that back up the original stories, the witnesses that were there originally, and what Poppy had to say originally, too.
Billy Myers is still alive, to my understanding.
Yes, I've spoken to him recently several times. His health, you know, he's up there now. He's in his 80s. And his health has had some issues, but he's doing pretty well.
To my understanding, he's created an organization, some people might call it a religion, around his communications with a variety of aliens. I've seen online, for example, extensive journals that were published, I think, online in 2010, but go back to the 1980s. Documenting in detail his conversations with not just Semjassi, but a whole handful of other aliens, and I think they're not even all from the Pleiades, from other locations as well.
That's true. Some are from a place called the Dahl Universe, and that's D-A-H-L. Billy primarily spoke with Semjassi, Quetzal, and Ptah. Those were the three Pleiadian contacts that he recorded the conversations of. He's been recording these since he began having contact back in 76. So this is something that is not new, and they just continue to pile up and pile up. The thing about the notes, there are some aspects of them that can be checked, that can be authenticated to different things and experiences. And I'll tell you about one that we had. But there are many things you can't verify in the contact notes. Also, there's many things that are just beautiful, simple logic. And it's like when he asked Semjassi, why are you coming here? What is your purpose? And she said, to get Earth humans to realize they're not the only thinking beings in the universe. That's beautiful. And it's so simple. And when she talks about how the Earth human creates their own luck from within, and it's about maintaining the balance of the spirit. Things we have a tendency to sort of forget sometimes, which doesn't do any of us any good, but we do that. And it's like gentle reminders throughout the contact notes. But I do want to tell you about one experience that we had, and we've had many, many, many over there. We were there with Shirley, and she was leaving. She had to go back to Washington, D.C. for a big gala, and Lee and I were staying there at the farm. While we were at the airport, there was a report that Sadat had died. By the time we got from the airport back to the Meyer farmhouse, Billy was sitting there and he says, have you heard the news? There was this big cross on the television and there was just music. There was nobody speaking. And he says, the report they're going to come out with is incorrect. Because what really happened was he was killed during a military parade. This was President Sadat of Egypt. This was back in 81. That's what happened. The report they initially came out with was incorrect. The report Billy gave us was accurate. So that was in the contact notes. He handed them to us that night to look at. So we could actually verify that he had some type of information prior to the event happening that was accurate. So that it just adds to the basis of there's a lot of interesting things here. And the reality, everybody's got to find their own space for that. Because you can't get in a place where you shut everything down and don't question. And you can't believe everything either. You have to find what's, I think, in your heart and what motivates you and moves you that way.
Well, the instance that you just cited is fascinating because it suggests that the and I understand you're pronouncing it correctly, or at least differently than I've ever heard, semyase. So semyase and these other aliens seem to know the future. They seem to have a different understanding of time than we have, and sometimes they're very specific about events in the distant future. I read one of the contact notes in supposedly dating to 1989 that talked about Ariel Sharon, who was at the time a general in Israel. And they said, well, he will be elected prime minister in 2001, something like 12 years into the future. Of course, that did happen. And since the contact notes were published, as best I could see, on the website in 2010, I thought to myself, wouldn't that have been clever if they simply put that in and made it seem like a precognition? On the other hand, if it's a real precognition, that's of enormous significance that they could be so specific about an event 12 years into the future.
I'll try to explain how they explained it to Meyer, and I don't know if I'll do a good job. But they say they have an event clock. Okay, so if something happens, it's A. Something else happens, it's B. That means C is going to happen. But if A happens and B doesn't happen, C never happens. So their event clock is structured to sort of follow what happens within our own realm of things. They do not view time like we do. It's more of a quantum concept of time. It's not a linear, we created it so we know when the sun rises and the sun sets. Their aspect of time is it's all existing. And so they can look not necessarily into the future, but again, looking at that event clock that says if A happens and B happens, C will happen. And that's how they look to our future.
Arthur Young, my mentor in those days, was a cosmologist, is the author of the book, The Reflexive Universe. And he has a vision of a humanity based on sort of his study of the natural world and the different differentiations among the animal kingdom, which is vast. And he believes that what he calls the human kingdom is also vast and that we are sort of at the low end. He would say that modern humans on this planet stand in relationship to the entire kingdom of intelligent sentient beings, roughly where clams are in terms of the animal kingdom. And so the idea that there would be highly advanced humans elsewhere in the universe was very attractive to him, whether they be aliens or whether they be the hidden masters that Madame Blavatsky talked about in Theosophy. You see the same thing in spiritual traditions. But as I understand it, Semyase said, you know, we're not that different from you. We have an older civilization, but she had a human body, mostly like our bodies, apparently, and suggested, well, we're just slightly more advanced than Earth humans are.
Right. Slightly more advanced and sort of out of sync with us. A different vibrational frequency than what we carry. But she said there are different types all over the universe, and many are visiting this planet. And the last we had was there was 156 different civilizations, and this is coming from Meyer in his context, that were visiting this planet. And not all of them look like us, but then we don't all look like each other. So we can't throw that expectation that they have to mimic our, you know, two arms, 2 feet, two legs, one head, one body thing. It's, I've heard some very unusual cases. I've investigated some very unusual cases. They're different, but we're all different. And I think that's part of the acceptance in the universe where you get to the point that you can have contact, is that you have to be okay with everyone's differences.
Well, it seems to me that we're right on the edge of having the sufficient spiritual growth, sufficient scientific knowledge to enter into what I would think of as a galactic civilization.
Uh-huh. Do you think, I hate to turn the question back to you, but do you think our technical abilities are superseding our spiritual growth?
Oh, by a long shot.
Do you think we can catch up to it?
That's the key, because it seems as if, I think most people would agree, if we don't advance more globally in a spiritual way, we'll end up destroying ourselves because we have that capacity now.
Right. Right. We certainly do. And the beauty of the spirit of recognizing that exists throughout the cosmos, throughout the universe, is so wonderful. It's something when you get into American Indian teachings or any indigenous people teachings, it's all about the spirit is universal. It doesn't just exist within the physical soul, it exists everywhere. And to accept that, I think, would make a huge difference in how far we could go with our own abilities, with the technical side, as well as with the mental and the problem-solving side. But getting into the spiritual aspects and communicating the two together, amazing.
I'm in total concurrence with that sentiment. It's been one of the major reasons why I've been doing all of this media for so many years. Let's get into some of the details of the UFO photographs. They are among the most controversial aspects of the Billy Myers case. And there is the issue, I think, raised by Calliope, his ex-wife, that he was building small UFO models, and the implication being that all of these photographs, maybe 1,000 of them, showing pictures of ostensible UFOs are really models that got somehow tossed into the air or suspended by strings or however, and photographed that way. And I know you do address that in the book. You say we tried very hard to see if that was the explanation.
Sure, because we went, well, I say we, but more my husband than I. He was far more skeptical than I was. He went in trying to disprove it. He figured we'd go in, we'd spend a weekend at the farm, and we'd figure out how it was done and leave. Instead, we left with inner negatives of the photographs. We left with movie footage, metal samples, audio recordings of the craft. But as far as the photographs go, that was something that back then we didn't have personal computers. Take yourself and put yourself back to 1975, 1976. Nobody had a personal computer. Cell phones were in somebody's dream. They weren't real yet. So all of this was happening at a time when it wasn't easy to duplicate or manufacture something. We went to JPL, Robert Post, the head of JPL's photo lab. He couldn't find any way that it was hoaxed. He didn't necessarily believe the case was real, because he couldn't believe in contacts with extraterrestrials, but he couldn't figure out how it was hoaxed. The same thing with Eric Eliason at USGS. We took it to him. And Jimmy Delatoso did amazing work on setting up the initial photogrammetric analysis work. It was stupendous what he did. And it goes through in the book step by step by step that he followed as he went through this process. But then we decided, okay, if none of these experts, these brilliant people that have put together photographic abilities for outer space and for different planets and things like this, can figure out how it's hoaxed, then why don't we try to build our own model? So we brought in Wally Gentleman, he worked with Industrial Lights and Magic. He was the model maker on several of Coppola's films. Kubrick's films, he just had a great background. And he went ahead, he made a model. It looked beautiful. We filmed it. We ran it back through the same analysis programs. They found the string. They found the size was incorrect. It wasn't 21 feet in diameter, as had been discovered in the original analysis. It was only 12 inches in diameter. So, and it shows up when you do the pixels and you check the distances of things. You can actually tell how big it is. So no, the model didn't hold up either. And neither do the ideas that, oh, it's a little tiny thing suspended on a line. You can see those lines, even fine filaments, show up as pixels when you do photogrammetric analysis.
I understand also that many of these images were taken in difficult countryside. You're in Switzerland and the mountains and hard to get to places. And Billy Myers himself lost an arm in an earlier accident. He's a one-armed man.
Yes. Yes. And his camera was sort of set on infinity. He couldn't focus it. He had an old used 35 millimeter camera. And so it wasn't even functional. When you look at what we have today, there was no comparison. But we went to the sites where he filmed these remarkable sessions with the Pleiades. And they told him that they were going to allow him to take pictures. And they would say, bring your camera. And he'd get on his moped and head out in the forest and come back with, you know, a new roll of film. But it's amazing the things that were going on. He has a photograph that he gave us that is of a jet fighter, Mirage jet fighter, in the same scene as a UFO. And these are what the Pleiadians call their beam ships, by the way. We refer to them as UFOs or UAPs, but the Pleiadians call them beam ships. And it has to do with their method of travel. So we had that, we looked at that, and then we started looking closer at the photographs. And the more we dug into them, there's one where a branch appears directly in front of a craft. So we had known distance to that branch, and we could take that estimation and judge how far away the craft was. So lots of different things like that. It really needed to be looked at in very intricate detail.
So you're convinced that these photos are genuine?
I believe the photos in the 70s were genuine, yes. I don't believe Billy's taking, in fact, he said he's not taking any additional forms of evidence at this point in time. So, but back then, yeah, I do believe that the photographs were real. I mean, and you get to a point where you go, what do you do with this? You've got all of this material. You know the news stations aren't going to cover it. Nobody wants to hear that, especially back in the 70s, because we were recuperating from the Betty and Barney Hill abduction. We were still looking at things in a, oh my gosh, they're going to come take us over type attitude. And here's this beautiful case with wonderful photographs, with amazing medals. The medals were phenomenal. With all of this documentation. So we decided to put it in a book and put it out there and let everybody make their own decision.
Let's talk about some of the human issues going on. For example, Wendell Stevens, the lead investigator who had published many, many other books about contact cases, actually was sent to prison. As I understand it, he was accused of sexually molesting young girls.
He was. And I have to tell you the backstory to that, which has never been brought out in anything. When Wendell was originally accused, he came to us and said, what do we do? Well, we brought in an attorney friend of ours that represented him. And the woman that accused him of molesting her daughter, well, actually, it wasn't even molesting. It was skinny dipping in the backyard pool, came forward and said, it happened on this date and this date and this date. And we looked at our calendars and said, that's impossible because Wendell was with us in Switzerland at that time. So she dropped that one. She came back with another set of charges when she found out what dates Wendell had been there. And Wendell just said, I can't financially afford this anymore because the attorneys and the court fees and all of that. So he didn't plead guilty. He just said no contest. And he did 5 years.
He pled no contest. And also, to my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, the divorce between Billy Myers and his wife Calliope had something to do with him fathering a child with another member of the community that had formed around him.
Yeah, I don't know about that because the divorce happened a lot longer after we were out of the scene. We were there 7 years during the investigation, so I don't have all the gossip and the scoop on what was going on at the farm. I do know that Calliope was extremely, I hate to label it, but she did not like having other people around the farm. And, I mean, it's quite possible that she and Billy had split up and Billy did his thing and she did her thing. I really don't know.
There was a book you probably are aware of, published by a fellow named Cal Korf, a person with a very suspicious background, as far as I can tell. I see all sorts of claims about fraudulent activity on his part, but his book essentially was one, and it was published by the Prometheus Press, the well-known skeptical publishing company. But he seemed to be going overboard to find example after example after example of fraudulent activity. I have to tell you, I don't place much credibility myself in that book because I've dealt with these skeptics for decades. And I know, you know, they approach the topic with prejudge. They prejudge these cases and then write whatever they want to write to conform to their prejudices. But nevertheless, when arguments like this are raised, one needs to investigate them one by one by one to see is there anything legitimately there that we should be aware of? And I imagine you did that.
Nothing that I am aware of. What happened was Cal Korf wrote us a letter after the initial photo journal came out back in 76, 78 is when he contacted us. And he was full of questions. And of course, we wrote back to people. We explained why we did different things and that. And then he and Wendell Stevens got into it and started going after each other. He just reached for anything. He said, my husband wore a wig. I mean, it was so hilarious that we just stopped paying any attention to him. I like skepticism. I don't like skeptics that are skeptical of everything and feel they have to put it down. I like skepticism because it makes you look deeper. And if you research, if you do the work, you're going to find it. You're going to find what's real. But it's for you on a personal basis.
Why would cosmonauts, as he called them, travel all the way from the Pleiades, which is many light years away? I think maybe 500 light years or so to get here, and then decide to have extensive communications with only one man, a Swiss farmer with one arm?
Well, that's interesting because there are Pleiadian contacts all over this planet. Every one of them was told they were the only ones. But it wasn't like Semyasa was visiting a particular man in Peru and Billy. She was visiting Billy. That was his contact. In Peru, I know of three contactees down there. I know of two in Egypt. I know of one in Japan and several in the U.S. So they're not just singling him out.
That's all very interesting. This is something I didn't appreciate, although I do know you were extensively involved in a UFO investigation in Mexico.
Very true. Still am. Yeah. Mexico is amazing. I mean, this started in 1991 and it goes on today. And the people are so receptive and open to this. It's really something to behold. We went to a place called Atlisco. It's outside Mexico City. they bring grandmothers, kids, dogs, beer coolers, climb this hill called Casita Blanca, and they go to the top of it and they sit and wait for UFOs to come in. They're so open and receptive. And they look at it as a miracle and they expect miracles.
And I gather they get them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all the time. We have over 10,000 videos from Mexico.
My goodness, that's 10,000 is a huge repository.
Mexico is this amazing place, though, when you get to what's going on down there and how they view UFOs versus how we're viewing them up here. Just looking at the difference between the hearings here and what's going on in Mexico with the hearings they're having in their Congress. Very, very different. We're looking at it from a fear aspect. Why should we be afraid of beings from another world? Mexico is looking at it with, oh my gosh, maybe we're all from another world. Because that's part of their history. When you get into the Mayans and all of their incredible documents and things that were left behind, they talk about brothers from the sky. Most old cultures do.
Including Native Americans.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Up in the Dakotas is where Devil's Tower is. Big legend there about the Seven Sisters, which are the Pleiades, and how the bear chased them into the heavens. All of the different American Indians that we've looked at and really researched show some connection primarily to the Pleiades, but also to other star systems. And they all believe that the soul returns to that area that they came from, which is out there in the heavens.
With all of these videos and photos and all of the analysis that you and your husband have engaged in, I would imagine that you've had somewhere along the way contact with the U.S. government about this case.
We actually did something kind of unique and different because we worked at a lot of labs that do a lot of government research, JPL, Scripps Institute, IBM, Ames Research, all of these different places. And we decided, okay, we're going to tell them what we're doing and we will share any information we have with them. So we took a different approach rather than being combative with them. We decided to be open about it. Let them have the same information we have. There's no reason to hide it. The point is to put it out there to let people make their own decisions. Whether it's government people or not, it doesn't matter. But we've had some amazing discussions with government personnel. They're curious, but they want to know. They want the thump on it evidence. That's what they're used to. And we were fortunate in many cases to be able to provide the thump on it evidence.
And then what happened?
Not much of anything. We were never threatened. Our printing presses weren't bombed, which we were told was definitely going to happen. No, it was sort of a nice, quiet, okay, you can go analyze your material here, but we want to know what you got from that analysis. And it worked out well.
Back in the day when this case first came out, there were major UFO civilian organizations, NICAP and APRO, MUFON and QFOs and others, I'm sure. I have not heard any of those organizations, and correct me if I'm wrong, endorsing the Billy Myers case.
APRO, in fact, is the first one that came out and said, this is really good. That's how the book got out there. The first volume got out there was APRO dropped it to their mailing list and said, this is a book you have to have. After that, it became kind of a tug of war over, oh, we want that. You give us that. You don't have a right to look at it. You know, it's just, it became, to me, the UFO clubs created more problems for themselves than they needed to. if they all got together and worked together and actually brought information together and correlated it, oh my gosh, what we could learn. But we're not there. We still have some little groups that want to get out there and fight with each other and say, this is good and this is bad. I don't know that the judgment aspect can come into play here when you have not looked at the evidence. And for any of them to come in and say, the case is definitely a hoax, I have a problem with that. Because not one of them came to us and said, show me what you've got. Not a single one. So to make a judgment that is so raw is wrong. If I'm going to judge something, I want to know what I'm judging. I want to be able to say, I did the work. I know that it's real or I know it isn't. I don't want to just make the statement.
Your new book, the 45th anniversary edition of UFOs, Contact from the Pleiades. It's a large book. It includes volume one and volume two. It has a great deal of photographs, diagrams, a discussion about the scientific work that was done on the case. And yet at the same time, I would say it's a work of journalism, basically. It's not a scientific report in and of itself. If I was a scientist, I would want to see laboratory reports and ideally reports, although it's, I don't know that there even are referee journals in the UFO field, but that would be, you know, the normal scientific standard is publication in a referee journal. And I think some people have suggested there needs to be even more than you have published so far.
Yeah, there was. There was another book that was written about our investigation called Light Years by Gary Kinder. And that goes into great detail of all of the individuals that we worked with and where we went and what we did. And Gary was an attorney and he really scoped it out. He got to the end of the book and he said he just couldn't go any further. He didn't know what to do with it. He was so overwhelmed with information that he didn't know whether to believe it, not believe it, or anything else. He actually put it on the shelf for a year before he went back and actually wrote it, finished it. It was something to see when you, and it happens with people, when you start looking at all that's out there and following not just what we did, but what others have done as well. It's pretty remarkable, not just for the Meyer case, but for many different cases. And we've got to be open and receptive to learning from these things, because that's where we're going to grow. And if the point of the human is to develop and grow, that means through knowledge, that means through spirit, that means through so many different ways. And this can help, but we have to be receptive. Got to have an open heart.
I understand the problem is because I went through the same kinds of issues myself with my, what was a 12-year study of Ted Owens, who called himself the PK man, and who, when we began the interview, I said there are many parallels between Ted Owens and Billy Meyer. One of the parallels is that they both saw themselves as religious figures of a sort. They both actually founded religious organizations.
We should talk about that because Billy was told to let this group form around him so they could take the words that the Pleiadians had given Billy and take them out through the world. And the group is called FIGU. And they did that. But then it switched, and it was interesting. Lee and I had a meeting with Stanton Friedman years and years and years ago, and he says, I like this case, but it has the potential to be a cult. Now, I know many of the people that are involved with FIGU. They're not directly involved with Meyer. They're involved with learning. It's like a group study thing, but there are enough there that people question why they're there, why they exist around Meyer, I have to tell you, I have not found a contactee that does not have the same type of group around them. People want to learn. They gravitate to individuals that have information. I mean, just take it down to its core basic reality. If someone has information and you want to learn about that information, you go to that individual. That's what happened. Billy didn't really set up a religion and say, oh, this is what it's going to be and you're going to worship me. But people did put him on a pedestal and they did create this sort of larger than life persona. And I've got to tell you, I think we as investigators were to a degree guilty of that ourselves, because we looked at Billy as something special for having these contacts, when in the long run, he's just a normal man. He's a human. He has flaws. He has problems, just like all of us. And since no one here is perfect, Billy's not in that perfect category either. He is very interesting to talk to and very knowledgeable on many different subjects. A lot of it comes from the Pleiadian conversations that he's had, but a lot of it also comes from his experience. He lived in India for a while. He's traveled through Turkey and all of these different areas. He's studied different religions. He's studied different aspects of thoughts on the universe. It's just Billy. I mean, I've traveled the world too, and I've studied many more things than UFOs. And I know that you've studied many, many, many things. So we have a tendency to sort of lock things in. This group around Billy is a religious cult. It's not. It's a group of people that want to go in and learn more.
As far as I can tell, they don't have the other trappings of a religion, like rituals or ceremonies of any sort. They're largely a study group, but I gather it has become something of a fundraising operation for Billy. That's one of the criticisms that the people who get involved are asked to make contributions.
That I don't know about, because I'm not a member of FIGO, so I really don't know. But I do know this. Through the years that we were there, living at the farm, we had a little camp trailer set right next to his house. And we stayed in the camp trailer. Cold, rain, snow, wind, didn't matter, we were there. We watched people come from all over the world and demand his time. Demand. Just stop what you're doing and talk to me. Unbelievable. So finally, one night we were sitting and Billy was exhausted. We were in the kitchen. He had this big red table and we were sitting around drinking coffee kirsch. And I said, Billy, why don't you tell these people if they want to talk to you, if they want to take your time away from the farm and what you're doing, they work. So if you're in the potato field and they want to talk to you, they get in the potato field with you and work. And that's what happened for a long time. But it just more and more people, and they would show up in the middle of the night demanding that he get out of bed and come talk to them. It was really quite amazing to watch. I thought, how can these people want to learn so badly that they basically harm the individual they want to learn from? Didn't make any sense, but that's what happened.
Well, the larger issue around contactees, I suppose, is that I think it's generally acknowledged now that some of the most prominent of the contactees, like George Adamski, were basically making it up, that they were fake, and that sort of tarnished the whole idea that anybody who claims to have been aboard a UFO or have a communication with an alien being must also be trying to capitalize on public interest, and therefore they cannot be relied upon. They're faking it, most likely.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I've met too many contactees. I mean, we receive a lot of mail from people that claim to be contactees. A lot of them, especially in South America, they don't want notoriety. Billy didn't want notoriety. Billy was content doing what Billy was doing. When we first got there, he didn't have indoor plumbing in that house. he washed his face in a horse trough in the mornings. I watched it happen. It was quite amazing. When they needed water, they went out to the well, they pumped it, they brought it in, they heated it on the stove. But he really wasn't into the public, oh, look at me thing. But the public was interested in what he had. So they all made a footpath right to his door. In, let's just say, Peru, with a couple of the contactees I know down there, they are not telling anybody because they don't want the notoriety. And the only reason they came to us is because they were aware of the work we had done in Mexico.
That makes perfect sense. I imagine it was Wendell Stevens who decided to create more public awareness of the Billy Myers case.
Wendell loved to be out there with his stuff. Absolutely. Actually, the first time we arrived in Switzerland, it was in April, and it was cold and windy, and we had gone inside, and there was a television crew that had come in from Zurich to interview him about his contacts. And there were people sitting around and all contributing what they had seen as witnesses to the events. And he was talking about his experiences and things like that. And it never let up. Der Stern, Blick, all of them sent people to the farm to interview Billy. Television crews from all over the world. We took Japanese crews in three different times. We brought our own crews in and filmed documentaries. So yes, it's something that once that word gets out there, it's gone. And this was before Wendell was involved with the case. And when Wendell got involved, of course, then he started writing about it everywhere because he was so excited that there was a case that had such extreme physical documentation. And that just thrilled him no end. He had been involved in military aspects of examining different UFO footage and things like that. This was unique to him and really something that had to be looked at from a global perspective as well as a universal perspective. So he would tell anyone that would listen.
Now let's talk about the witnesses. When we first started talking, you said only Billy knows the truth, but apparently there were several dozen people who witnessed UFOs in the area while he reported his contacts.
Well over 100 witnesses that we interviewed. Billy knows the truth of the contacts. Is that where he got the photographs, the metal samples, the things like that? The witnesses have their truth as to what they saw. So there's two different things there. I kind of have to throw myself into that witness category because we watched Billy very closely. We didn't see the craft, but we saw where he walked out into the forest and suddenly there's no more muddy footprints to follow. They vanished in a clearing. So where did he go? You know, different things like that. It's just something that everybody has their own little niche for witnessing something, but Billy knows the whole thing.
Billy also, as I gather, was a spiritual seeker long before the Pleiadian contact occurred, and I believe he also reported other contacts prior to the Pleiadian contact.
His first contact was at the age of 5, and he was with his father, and they saw a ship, and he says, "What is that?" And his father says, "It must be one of Hitler's weapons," and set it aside. But he did study in an ashram in India. He did meet beings from this doll universe in India while he was there. He has always been a seeker.
Britt, this has been a fascinating conversation. I'm sure we could go on for a long time going into so many of the other details of this case, but it's wonderful that you are reawakening public interest in the case. It's been dormant for quite a while, and I think People such as myself tended to assume, since we're not hearing much about it lately, that it must have been debunked or something. And, you know, unless you really get into the weeds and look at the details such as you have done, it's so easy to dismiss a case like this.
It's a wonderful thing for me to be able to get this book back out there to a new audience. Because, like I said, the important thing is to think and to use your heart when you think. And so if we can do that, if we can grow on that level as humans, it's been 45 years of bliss as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I think that's exactly the right spirit with which to approach these unusual phenomena, with an open heart. So thank you so much, Britt, for being with me today.
Thank you.
And for those of you watching or listening, thank you for being with us, because you are the reason that we are here. Two in the New Thinking Aloud Dialogues book series is a tribute to parapsychologist Russell Targ, celebrating his 90th birthday. New Thinking Aloud is a non-profit endeavor. Your contributions to the New Thinking Aloud Foundation make a meaningful difference in our ability to produce new videos.